Hello, and welcome to the Bitcoin Roundup podcast presented by Coinbits. We bring Bitcoin news, hot topics of conversation, and deep dives into a variety of Bitcoin topics to you weekly. We are Coinbits, a Bitcoin financial services company. Check us out at coinbits.app. This recording is for informational purposes only. No investment or legal or any other advice should be drawn from this content. And as always, consult an advisor before making any legal or financial decisions.
Coinbits is a Bitcoin-only platform. We're family-owned and family-run. We've been around since 2017. And we run on passion and heart. We don't have, you know, a lot of the glitzy, in-your-face marketing type stuff. We just build. We have technical excellence on the team. We have some of the best engineers I've ever worked with in my career. And we're building really good technology that will allow people to easily use Bitcoin to protect themselves and prepare for the eventuality of hyper-Bitcoinization. So the idea is that you make an account with Coinbits, you use us as an on-ramp. You can also use us increasingly for other banking purposes. We are rolling out US dollar accounts very soon. You're able to, you'll be able to deposit your paycheck into Coinbits, and you can use that as dollars or as Bitcoin. You'll also be able to open retirement accounts with us. We're putting the finishing touches on a Bitcoin IRA product that we're really excited about. And so so go to coinbits.app and check us out there. If you have a US bank account, you can use us. We are also adding the ability to serve international customers and so on very, very soon. We have a very, very full roadmap in the next 6 months, but we will make it. And in any case, real quick, Coinbits is a Bitcoin financial services company. We are not a financial advice company. We don't give financial advice. Whether Bitcoin makes sense for you and your portfolio and your goals is really up to you and your financial advisor. We can't help you with that. We can just tell you how Bitcoin works and why we think it has it offers a tremendous opportunity to plebs and individuals and businesses and institutions. So today we have Don from Sat Standard Capital. I'm going to let David do the proper introduction, and then we can kick off the conversation.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks everybody for being here. We've got, like you said, Dave, Don from Sat Standard Capital. Don, you're based in Kansas City. Okay, it's Kansas City, Kansas, right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay, cool. Just making sure I got that right. And you are a technologist and now getting into Bitcoin venture investing in the Bitcoin ecosystem. And, I'd love it if you basically gave us an overview more in depth of your background, kind of how you got into Bitcoin, your mission with Sat Standard Capital, and you also run a Bitcoin meetup as well, right?
I do, yeah. So I help run the Kansas City Bitcoin meetup that we just kicked over our 2-year anniversary here about a month ago. So that's been super fun. But yeah, a little bit about just my background in general. I have a healthcare IT background. So I grew up here in Kansas City. One of the biggest employers here in town is a software company called Cerner. And they basically do electronic medical record software for a ton of the biggest healthcare systems in the world. So after I graduated, I went to work there. Never pictured myself as really being a software engineering type guy. I was more of a business background. I had a business major. Kind of a long story short, ended up kind of diving head into software side of the business without really having any experience, formal education, kind of just learned on the fly, and ended up really loving it, really enjoyed the challenge of, you know, learning how to code a little bit and do modifications for hospitals. So kind of my job was more in the consulting side of the business. We would go out to hospitals that were implementing the software, help them configure it the way they wanted it, helped train their users, and helped do implementation and support and those types of things. So ended up being in that world for about almost 15 years. So I ended up starting my own consulting and software company kind of along the same lines. And as I, kind of built that business, scaled that business, that also kind of paralleled the time that I was learning about Bitcoin. So one of my coworkers introduced me to Bitcoin back in 2016. And my story is kind of similar to a lot of people. You hear about Bitcoin, you see the numbers start going up a little bit, and then you immediately like jump into all kinds of other cryptos. So during the 2017 bull market, I was one of those guys that was out there on like shady exchanges buying all kinds of crap. And it wasn't until the bear market came that I really took the time to actually dig in and learn about Bitcoin and why it was different, and really have been what we would call, a maximalist since that 2018, 2019 timeframe. But yeah, kind of for me, like the real crossover for me as far as like diving into the ecosystem full time happened after COVID. Just everything that I learned about Bitcoin up to that point and all the crazy things that started happening in response to COVID. I kind of realized that if Bitcoin is ever like going to go like mainstream, it's now, right? There's no reason for it not to, with all of the crazy money printing and lockdowns and just people realizing kind of, what was behind some of these smoke screens. And so at that time, I had the opportunity to sell the business, jump into Bitcoin full time, and I didn't really know what that meant at the time, being full time Bitcoin. So luckily for me, I linked up with a couple other Kansas City Bitcoiners, and we immediately realized that there wasn't a Bitcoin dedicated meetup here in town. So we started one, have had a ton of fun building that. And then I kind of started making like small personal angel investments into Bitcoin companies about three and a half, 4 years ago now, and have kind of just been doing that since, and more kind of building it up and formalizing it as I go along. So anyway, I know that wasn't the shortest intro, but that's a little bit about the background.
No, that's excuse me, that's really good. And it's interesting that you, I guess before you got into the venture stuff, you figured out that it was Bitcoin and it wasn't like crypto, right? But what's really interesting for me, and I'm wondering if you could offer some interesting perspectives on this, is like why like 90 99% of VC, why that hasn't clicked for them yet. Because like, at least anecdotally, right, like I remember when I was younger, I used to really look up to like all the VCs. I was like, wow, Peter Thiel, he's so smart. And now that I work in Bitcoin, and like you saw Peter Thiel gave a speech. I mean, maybe it's clicked for him now because he like invested in River recently, but his Bitcoin magazine speech, and like, I think it was not this year, but the last one, that was horrible. And I was like, oh my gosh, right? I mean, never have any heroes, right? But I guess like from your perspective, what like you would think that the VC industry would have caught on to this earlier, right?
Totally. Yeah. And I think there's a couple of main reasons for that. I think number one is there's just kind of a misperception about what Bitcoin is for a lot of like the mainstream tech guys and mainstream venture capitalists. I think, they view Bitcoin as like sound money and like a store of value, and that's it. And I think in their mind, that means that every other use case is ready to be disrupted by quote unquote crypto. And so I think they don't realize that, as we know, a lot of the things, pretty much everything that's being built outside of Bitcoin eventually will be built on Bitcoin if it's a proven use case and something that, is proved to be valuable long term. And so I think that's one reason. I think another reason too is it's really hard for these fiat maximalist types to understand that, you have to take a low time preference kind of mindset to investing in a lot of Bitcoin only companies, as opposed to crypto companies, which, as we know, can print money out of thin air. And, VCs love the quote unquote short time to liquidity that they can provide to their LPs when they get, severely deep discounts on tokens. And you know, they lock those up for 6 or 12 months or whatever the case is, and then they're able to dump those for, you know, 10 to 100 times what they got them for. It's just pretty hard to, in their minds, I think, to turn down those kind of potential returns. Now, we've known in the Bitcoin world that that's not going to be sustainable. And I think the last 12 months has obviously proved that out with the collapse of most of the crypto ecosystem and a lot of the massive venture funds that went along with it. So I think, you know, I think the misunderstandings are kind of twofold. One, just not understanding Bitcoin, the technology and what's possible on it. And then two, just kind of like the, you know, the fiat denominated kind of viewpoint that they view potential venture returns through.
Okay, that makes sense. What another thing factor I think that might have impacted that, at least like at the very least, like the due diligence, but also kind of their like time preference, right? Because interest rates are a price of time, or like the price of time, is the like artificially low interest rates, at least in like, I don't know, 2020.
Yep.
Do you think that was a factor? Because I remember like Tiger Global was doing so many deals. I was looking at that and thinking like, how are they even like screening anything? They're just like putting money from like one, it's like they're getting money and then they're just putting it into something else. And
totally
that had to impact it, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, there was just so much money kind of awash throughout the entire system in 2020, 2021, really. I mean, you know, kind of since the global financial crisis back in 08, you know, it's been a decade plus of money printing and just people searching for places to park that money that can outstrip the pace of inflation. And so I think that's, you know, that's obviously what led people further and further out on the risk curve as well, which led a lot of money to flow into the venture capital sector in general. And then, you know, the furthest out on the risk curve that you can go within an already pretty risky sector of venture capital is crypto venture capital. And so I think, you know, when the money printing really got to the height in early 2021, late 2020, that's kind of when you saw people going the furthest out on the risk curve and money just piling into these crypto funds, whether it's, you know, A16Z or Consensus, Paradigm, Polychain. I mean, the list goes on. But you know, some of these guys raised over billion-dollar funds with a B, which is pretty wild to think about. And like you said, you know, there were a whole game in venture, especially for more of the fiat return maximalists, is to deploy that money as quickly as possible, show some paper returns, and then go raise your next larger fund, right? Because you want to get as much carry and as many management fees as you can. And so, yeah, I mean, 2020, 2021, the beginning of 22, to a certain extent, there were just deals being done left and right. Few people were asking questions, especially on the crypto side of the house, which, as we have hindsight, it becomes pretty obvious how, you know, the FTXs of the world, the BlockFi's of the world got as big as they did without without people noticing some pretty red flags. So yeah, I think it's a combination of all those things.
Did they not notice the red flags, or did they ignore the red flags? I mean, there's all these pictures of, you know, Sam Bankman-Fried, like hugging Congress people and visiting Washington, D.C. Like, really, are we supposed to, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I find it hard to believe that there were no flags that were seen at all, but that might be just me.
No, totally. Yeah, I agree with you. And I think too, I mean, it's pretty hard to ignore that, you know, some of the biggest crypto funds have either current lobbyists on payroll or former, you know, former government employees, former lobbyists, things like that, which, you know, I guess to, in their defense a little bit, I mean, that whole kind of industry is prevalent with that type of thing. So to a certain extent, they were kind of playing in the game that, you know, was laid out for them. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I find it hard to believe that they didn't at least turn a little bit of a slanted eye towards some of the things that they were seeing. So But I mean, I think to the good news, in my opinion, is I know this kind of sounds maybe like you know, people have been saying this for years, but I really do think we might have seen the end of crypto this time. There was just so much capital destruction and such a wide breadth of cohorts of people that were affected by the last year of crypto blowups that I think the scale was large enough this time that I don't know if they're going to be able to pull it off again. So if there is, you know, some silver lining, I think that might be kind of like the end of crypto as we know it. Of course, there will always be, you know, schemers and scammers that are trying to come up with new ways to money from people that don't understand what's happening. But I think, as far as the large scale guys that are really just, you know, starting things with from the beginning is kind of, you know, being an exit scam. I don't know if we'll see that again to at least the extent that we have over the past 12 months. But no, yeah, the BlackRock thing is interesting for sure. Especially the way that, you know, they have talked about Bitcoin in the past. It's kind of funny that, you know, they've come full circle and it's hard to believe that they, you know, have really changed their opinion that much. So we'll see.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. This has been going around this, like how it started. Bitcoin is an index of money laundering. That was 2017, Larry Fink. And then how it's going, yep. Bitcoin ETF. And so, do you think that like in those 6 years, is it a defensible thing? Is it like in those 6 years, the understanding of Bitcoin has grown across, you know, investors in general and institutions? And, you know, maybe it was debatable in 2017, or at least a defensible position or something like that, whereas now it's not? Or do you think like some conspiracy theorists, not me, are saying online that, like, you know, comments about how Bitcoin sucks on the behalf of that BlackRock has made in the past, and SEC's enforcement actions against Coinbase and Binance are really well timed to kind of cause a dip in Bitcoin, so that if you're going to try to like build a big stash of Bitcoin and then wrap it in an ETF and sell it through institutions, through brokerages, it would be really nice, you know, to have like some kind of FUD or some big market event cause the price to dip. So like, I don't know what you think of all those conspiracies, but do you think that like the change in tune among institutions over the last few years, is it just that the juice is starting to flow, they're starting to like understand a little bit better? Or is there this element of like, if I can't participate, no one should, and then when they're able to participate, they sort of change their tune?
Yeah, I think, you know, just for institutions of various natures, I think education is something that's definitely been a lot better as far as Bitcoin and why it's different over the last 5 or 6 years. You know, back in 2016, when I kind of got involved, there was hardly any, like, you know, Andreas Antonopoulos was basically one of the very few people out there doing Bitcoin education. And, you know, even then it wasn't all Bitcoin related. So I think now, obviously, we have a wealth of really great Bitcoin-only podcasts, books, articles, et cetera, to point new people to start their learning journey. And so I do think that, you know, plays a role in just kind of slowly educating the populace. When it comes to like the mega institutions, I don't think they care. I think they see, you know, a way to make money. They see the game theory of, you know, not participating in this ecosystem and what that could do to their business long-term. And so I think we're starting to see some of that play out now. Larry Fink and BlackRock specifically, I think, you know, some of those conspiracy theories probably aren't too far-fetched. But if you start talking more about other capital allocators, whether that's like family offices or pension funds, I think just the education in general has certainly gone a long way to help more of those folks understand Bitcoin. What do you guys think about some of the, I saw some pretty in the weeds takes on BlackRock and some of the mechanisms that were kind of buried in their filing as far as, you know, supporting forks and redemptions. Do you guys have any hot takes on any of that?
Yeah, my hot take when I saw it, it didn't actually raise a red flag. To me, it looks sort of like
It was like a CYA clause, as they say. It was like a legal clause that's like, basically, if we fuck it up, like, we're not liable. Like, you always put that in like every contract that you can get away with it, right? Right? Like, it's just sort of, it's a standard, like, the way that you think if you're a lawyer. You're like, well, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to have to be blamed if something goes wrong with a fork or whatever. I don't think it would, because some people were saying it was like, oh, they're gonna, you know, support some random fork or something, or there's gonna be a block size war and they're gonna go the wrong way. I guess that's possible. I just, like, I saw the hot takes and then I read what they were referring to and I was like I don't know how you could not write that. Like, if you were trying to start an ETF, that would be the smart thing to write to just kind of protect yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I do think there is some, I mean, obviously there's a lot of risks with any kind of product where you're not holding your own keys. But I do think the fork risk is a legitimate one, right? I mean, if the issuer has the power to determine which Bitcoin is the real Bitcoin and they choose wrong for whatever reason, you know, whatever happens in the future, and you have a lot of money parked in that vehicle, you're pretty screwed. So, I mean, obviously nothing beats self-custody. I do think, you know, whether it's them or a different issuer that eventually comes to market, I mean, it's going to be crazy the amount of capital this product is going to suck up. So,
yeah. but wait, so is it a risk to, well, so I think there's two possible risks. So I agree with you. It's absolutely a risk to the holder of the ETF, that they would kind of follow the wrong fork. But do you think that, I think some people were kind of implying it was actually a risk to Bitcoin, like, you know, having so much capital tied to a certain fork would maybe cause a chain to become longer that didn't benefit hodlers and didn't benefit decentralization and so on. Do you see that? Actually, I don't know about that. I have no opinion. I'm just curious what you think about that.
Yeah, I don't view that as much of a risk at all. I mean, luckily for all of us, Bitcoin isn't proof of stake. So even if you have a ton of Bitcoin, you don't get more say in the network. Of course, you get to flex your muscles as far as, you know, social kind of strategies go. If for whatever reason BlackRock decides that Bitcoin Cash or whatever the next one's going to be is the real Bitcoin, and they have the ear of influential folks, you know, that are tied to Bitcoin companies or whatever, I mean, that would be annoying. But I mean, Bitcoin obviously doesn't care. It'll keep doing its thing. And I think there's enough hardcore Bitcoiners out there now who are vocal enough and have large enough platforms to kind of combat some of that potential misinformation, which during the block size wars wasn't quite there yet. So yeah, I mean, that's certainly a small risk. That one doesn't worry me too much specifically.
Are you like well versed enough in kind of how ETFs work to wade into the debate about whether this is or is not actually an ETF? Because there's been a lot of back and forth on that too. I don't know if you have an opinion on that.
Not really, other than what I've just read. I mean, it sounds like this structure is kind of similar to how the GLD gold ETF operates. So from that perspective, it looks pretty standard, but yeah, I'm definitely not an ETF guru as far as how the technicals work under the hood.
Interesting. Thank you. Awesome. It looks like David's actually having some audio issues. He might have just hopped back out and I just re-invited him to co-host with me. Interesting. So what are some of the developments in the Bitcoin ecosystem more recently, besides the ETF, which is really fresh, but, you know, some of the new technologies or the new business models that you're seeing emerge on the markets? As an investor, what types of things are exciting you in the Bitcoin space right now?
Dave, I actually had one last question on BlackRock. Sorry.
Okay, sure.
I had some Wi-Fi issues in my apartment. I had to step outside. So one thing, you know, Don, I'm not sure, you might not have an opinion on this because you're more in the VC realm, but I know a lot of people like gold people say that, like, you know, there's like so much paper gold being traded around that, like, that, basically, you know, the price gets like suppressed.
Do you think that this BlackRock product could lead to something like that, like some sort of manipulation? And I mean, it's hard to really determine, like, oh, okay, what do we do if that's the case, right? But I'm just curious about your thoughts on that.
Sure. Yeah, I think a lot of it will come down to how transparent they decide to be as far as the custody goes. So I know they announced, I believe they announced they were going to be using Coinbase for custody. If they were to do, you know, some sort of proof of reserves type of attestation, I think that would be helpful, that folks could at least see that, you know, the Bitcoin that the trust purports to have is actually sitting there on chain and not being rehypothecated. That would go a long way. I kind of view the risk of rehypothecation as being pretty small for this type of product, just because it is so regulated and there's so many, you know, eyes on the product itself. I do think if there were going to be price suppression, it would generally be done in the futures market, which I think is, you know, where a lot of the gold bugs kind of see that happening. And, you know, obviously Bitcoin has had tradable futures since CME came on board with their product at the top of the bull market in 2017. So some would say, you know, maybe there's a correlation there as far as price suppression goes, but I don't generally put too much weight into those types of things. I think Bitcoin being worldwide currency and traded in pretty much every currency 24/7, 365 throughout the world, I think it's pretty hard to, you know, coordinate something that would be able to suppress the price in every currency, every second of the day. That's my opinion.
Wow. That's interesting. I very much like that last part you said. That gives me some confidence. Dave, did you want to kind of re-ask that question that you left off with?
Oh, sure. Yeah. It was just sort of about other developments in the Bitcoin space. I mean, things are moving really fast. You have a lot of companies building L2 products, new business models emerging, new social experiences emerging. And just as an investor, like, what do you see, you know, because it's easy to get caught up in the hype and the excitement as a user, as a Bitcoiner, but, you know, investors, you have to kind of take a more measured and grounded approach to things in terms of where the opportunities really are for new business models to kind of succeed. And so I was just wondering what you see on that front and what makes you most excited as an investor.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a ton going on the layer two space right now specifically. And, you know, kind of the old trope that the building gets done in the bear market. I think this bear market's definitely proving that out. I mean, just within like the last month, we've seen multiple announcements for new ideas of, you know, layer twos or sidechains, things like that. So you have everything, you know, from Arc, which is one of the newly announced kind of ideas as far as a scaling solution goes, to things like Fediment. And of course, the way that Nostr is starting to interact with Bitcoin as well. There's just a ton going on. And not to mention just all of the, you know, the products and services and companies that are being built out on Lightning as well as it continues to scale. So I think there's tons to be excited about on the building front. But from an investment perspective, I think we need a little bit more time for the new layer two solutions to be kind of fleshed out before you know, companies and ideas can start being built on those. They're mostly just, you know, ideas right now. I think, you know, if we're talking maybe 6 to 12 months from now, it'll be a whole different story as far as those go. But I'm still super excited about Lightning specifically. I know Lightning's kind of been taking some punches from some certain folks here recently, but I do think just looking at it empirically, it's been a pretty big success for, you know, being basically a 3 to 4 year old technology now. I think we're starting to see it come into its, you know, adolescence phase, and then sure, there are things that still need to be worked out from an engineering perspective. But I do think that Lightning is scaling. I do think we're starting to see some really provable business models be built out on Lightning. You know, whether that's like value for value using the Lightning network, whether that's, you know, payments and remittances, we're starting to see some some companies really gained some traction in those areas, which is exciting. And then kind of maybe moving over to the Nostr ecosystem a little bit and how it's integrating with Bitcoin. I mean, I think it's been successful enough to get the eyes of Apple on it, right? We saw this week that Apple wants its cut from the zaps that are flowing through the Damus app specifically. I think I saw a note yesterday on Twitter that there's been over 1 million zaps now completed through Nostr just, you know, in the past 6 to 8 months, which is pretty wild to think about. So I think that's scaling up pretty aggressively and pretty quickly. And so that's pretty exciting. I still think that ecosystem is also a little bit early as far as like, you know, making venture style type bets. But I expect that by the end of the year, we'll start seeing some pretty exciting opportunities kind of build out from that ecosystem as well. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on. I think, you know, just kind of in broad strokes, I get really excited about the ability to build new financial applications on top of Bitcoin. I think we, you know, if we're talking a few years from now, we'll probably see kind of like the new wave of finance really being built on Bitcoin. So it's a pretty exciting time to be an investor in the ecosystem. There's tons of new interest, tons of new capital flowing in, which obviously helps with more founders and technologists being interested in building businesses on Bitcoin as well. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's bear market vibes for sure. I mean, people are, it's harder to raise money now than it has been in the past 3 or 4 years. There's some headwinds for entrepreneurs, but I think, you know, people that are starting businesses now or scaling businesses now, if they can survive, you know, this time, they're set up pretty well to be kind of ahead of the pack when the next bull market arrives.
Hey, Don, Maher here. I hope you're doing well. Thanks for joining the spaces today. I know I joined a little bit late, so I may have missed it, but I was just curious. I've been super intrigued by sort of this up and coming class of Bitcoin or VCs in the last, you know, maybe 2 years or so. That definitely wasn't the case, you know, even, you know, 3-4 years ago, 5 years ago, when sort of Bitcoin started to hit mainstream. So I'm curious, like, first of all, I guess first question is, did you come from a traditional VC background? And if so, how was that transition from traditional fiat VC to Bitcoin VC? Would love to hear your story there.
Yeah, thanks for the question. So I do not have a traditional finance background or a venture background before jumping into the Bitcoin ecosystem. I have a pretty extensive angel investing background prior to Bitcoin. So I've been investing small angel checks into various technology companies for about the last 10 to 12 years. And it's only been about the past 3 to 4 years that I've been focused on the Bitcoin ecosystem full-time and investing in Bitcoin companies full-time. And so I think, you know, I've kind of, when I first got involved writing small checks to Bitcoin startups about 3 years ago, there were only a handful of angels in the space and even less, you know, dedicated Bitcoin-only venture funds. And like you said, over the last couple of years, we've kind of seen the rise of not only more dedicated capital funds being stood up, but more interest from just traditional investors outside of the Bitcoin ecosystem that have been starting to cut checks into Bitcoin companies. And I think that just coincides with just the general awareness of Bitcoin in the mainstream. I think, you know, prior to the COVID timeline, there were still quite a few people out there who, if you asked them what Bitcoin was, they, you know, they didn't know. And now if you go ask pretty much anybody that you might run into, if they've heard of Bitcoin or know what Bitcoin is, pretty much everybody has at least heard of it. And many have, you know, some kind of opinion about it, whether that's informed or not, you know, who knows, but at least most people have heard of it now. And so I think just the mainstream of Bitcoin in general has attracted a lot of folks to the ecosystem. And then I think also too, like I mentioned a little while ago, I think just in the last 12 months, people are finally starting to realize that there's a difference between Bitcoin and the rest of the crypto ecosystem too. So I expect that trend to continue. I think a lot of the remaining capital that was focused on crypto, if it's not already destroyed in bankruptcies, I do think a lot of that capital that's left will begin to flow into the Bitcoin ecosystem over the next 12 to 24 months. And we're starting to see the initial signs of that here recently as well, which is encouraging, I think. You know, eventually every company is going to be a Bitcoin company, and eventually every venture capitalist will at least have a Bitcoin strategy as part of their portfolio. So I think that's a great thing, and I think it'll go a long way for just helping the bridges and the tooling that Bitcoin needs to go, you know, mainstream worldwide. It'll help all of that get built, which is great.
Yeah, I think what makes the maybe the process or the experience a little bit different, maybe from your prior experience just doing like traditional angel investing in technology companies, is you have a much deeper sense of shared values with these founders who are building on Bitcoin. Because I've experienced that when even recruiting, you know, for Coinbits, right? Like it's having you know, gone and built startups in the past that were in, you know, sort of, you know, regular tech, so to speak. You know, it's a lot different when you're recruiting in the Bitcoin space and like meeting people who literally share your perspective and view of the world and the values and that you hold personally, but also professionally. And so I don't know if you've experienced that same likeness.
Definitely, for sure. And I think too, having kind of like that aligned vision and value set is actually really important for dedicated Bitcoin venture funds to have with their LP base. Because if you don't have that and you just get, you know, a bunch of people that are just trying to make a quick buck involved, I think that those people are going to be disappointed, right? The reality of the situation is that it takes longer to scale and build a Bitcoin company, at least to date. I do think this will change, but at least to date, it's taken longer to have success as a Bitcoin-only company compared to crypto companies for, you know, the reasons we talked about earlier, where obviously Bitcoin companies can't print their own money when crypto companies can, and that's pretty hard to overcome. And so I think having that mission aligned capital really does make a difference, not only from, you know, the fund's perspective and having a chance to actually, you know, create value with your investments, but also from the founders and the entrepreneurs' perspective. I think, you know, many Bitcoin company founders really value having, Bitcoiners on the cap table, just because, like you said, they know there's a shared alignment and understanding and values. And so, you know, they would, if given a choice, I think most of those founders would certainly rather have Bitcoiners on the cap table compared to crypto or outside just generalist venture investors. And up until recently, you know, a lot of the times those guys couldn't really pick and choose. You know, I think that's changed a little bit over the last couple of years now that there's more Bitcoin dedicated venture money in the ecosystem. But, you know, prior to say 2021, a lot of the times if they wanted to fill around, you know, founders had to accept capital from outside the ecosystem. And as we've seen with some of the companies, I won't name any names, but, you know, we have seen a little bit of issues come to light over the last year or so with some companies that maybe took money from folks not so aligned on the mission and then had some pressure from those investors and had to make certain business decisions that, you know, I'm guessing they probably wouldn't have made otherwise. So I do think the alignment and the shared values is very important for sure.
Thank you, Don.
Yeah. One thing I thought that was interesting that you were talking about, like how, I mean, obviously the, like every company is going to become a Bitcoin company, but also it seems like not only has there been more investment over the past few months into the Bitcoin only ecosystem, but like very recently, like I saw yesterday, Binance was doing something on Lightning, and you know, Coinbase is partnering with Jack Dorsey's wallet company, Bit. I think it's called BitKey. BitKey, right?
Yep.
So it seems like, yeah. I mean, it's kind of frustrating as a Bitcoin only company. We're like, oh, you guys should have been like, we're doing this too, and we're doing this stuff too, and we're doing it better. Like, big players don't do this, but like, you know, it's still a good thing too, ultimately, that they're like embracing it, or at least seeing that it's like, that it's the valuable route. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I'm with you. I wish Jack wouldn't have chosen Coinbase for that partnership. But yeah, I mean, it's only taken Coinbase, what, 5 years now to finally implement Lightning. So I guess we'll give them that. But yeah, I wish I could have been like a fly on the wall of that room where they were deciding who to partner with for that integration specifically. But yeah, I mean, I do think obviously companies that are more crypto focused have been forced to understand that they're going to need to at least, you know, tangentially support Bitcoin in a way that their users are demanding if they want to remain relevant. Certainly we've talked about Lightning a little bit, I think too, with the recent, you know, kind of explosion of ordinals and inscriptions. I think that too was kind of a wake up call for a lot of other companies that didn't have the Bitcoin infrastructure in place that they probably should have. And then, you know, overnight there was this huge demand for that type of infrastructure. And you saw a lot of folks scrambling to get that implemented. I don't know if you guys have a hot take on ordinals or not. I don't really care personally. I think, you know, the fee market is working the way it should. If people want to mess around with that, they can. I personally don't find it all that interesting, but interested to hear what you guys think, if you have any thoughts.
I was going to see if you had a hot take, because I'm pretty much aligned with what you just said, but Maher, feel free to go ahead.
I was going to say the same thing. I think let Bitcoin has perfect market information, and so when you just let the markets play out, you know, we had a week there where, you know, fees were upwards of what, like $25 or so average fee, but things are back down. And so I'm with you guys. I don't care too much either.
Yeah. The one thing I did kind of find interesting was there was a little bit of time there, you know, kind of during the height of the mania and the interest, where certain transcribers were paying out of band directly to miners to get their transactions included in, you know, the next blocks. I thought that was interesting. I still don't fully understand the mechanics behind exactly what they were doing. But you know, I think having a transparent fee market is important. And so I would be a bit concerned if, you know, that type of thing became prevalent, but I think we've seen kind of like some new tooling from like the mempool.space guys, for example, that are making the fee market more transparent, which is a great thing to see.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard of that. All I had heard that was like, you know, there was the flood of the just like JPEGs, right? That like it was almost like spam. And then there was I saw a few corporations like Balenciaga did an ordinals, like did some inscriptions that they must have paid like way too much money for as like a marketing stunt, which I thought, I was like, oh, that's very silly that Balenciaga did that.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. So maybe it's like, there was the positive side was a wealth transfer from fools to Bitcoin miners, which is good for us.
Yep.
Right? but on the flip side, the bad side for me was, and I agree that the market resolves it, but it's just too bad that there was an injection of FUD that, you know, affected people, like people who are earlier in their journey. They have less conviction and less understanding of what's happening. And so all of a sudden, you know, like the what happened at the conference, you have, you know, this historical moment where a major political candidate for president announces a Bitcoin platform, and 2 seconds later you have these morons in wizard costumes bouncing around the stage. It was just unfortunate from a communication standpoint. But I mean, it doesn't have any like long-term effects, except for maybe just making our jobs a little bit harder to communicate the value.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I am glad that it happened kind of during the boring bear market part of the cycle, as opposed to when everybody's eyes are on the industry, right? I think it probably could have been worse if this would have happened, you know, maybe a year and a half from now or a year from now, as opposed to the depths of the bear market. So that's my half full glass take on it.
Hey, Don.
Imagine. Oh, go ahead, Maher.
Thanks, David. I just had a quick question for Don. I think that your perspective is super unique. But how do you answer the question to your LPs or just folks in who are interested in investing in Bitcoin companies of, should I just buy Bitcoin or, invest in a Bitcoin company? That's such a insightful and thoughtful question. And I don't know if I ever get a clear answer.
Yeah, for sure. Now that's a good question. It's something I talk about pretty much every day. So yeah, happy to dive into thoughts there. I think there's two things. Number one, I would never tell anybody not to buy spot Bitcoin and instead, dump the portion of their portfolio that is dedicated to the Bitcoin ecosystem straight into venture. I don't think that's the answer at all. I think I generally tell people, you obviously want to buy quite a bit of Bitcoin with whatever you're, say you have an allocation to Bitcoin that's maybe, let's just use 10% of your portfolio for an example. Of that 10%, I would certainly advise people to buy at least, half of 50% of that allocation to spot Bitcoin itself. And then, maybe go a little bit further out on the risk curve and mix some venture in to the other 50% of that allocation. I think the reasons are there's several that come to mind specifically. I think if we want Bitcoin to succeed, we need to support the companies that are building the infrastructure to bring Bitcoin to the mainstream. If nobody builds on-ramps, custody, social networks, education platforms, all of these types of things that's really going to take to get Bitcoin out to the world, I think we're doing ourselves a disservice to kind of just say that Bitcoin will win without supporting, like I said, the companies that are bridging the gap between now and a Bitcoin future. And so I think, if you're going to have money in the ecosystem, I think it makes sense to at least have a portion of that capital dedicated to the startups building that infrastructure. Number two, I think due to kind of the misaligned incentives of traditional capital allocators, there's a window of opportunity that is closing pretty quickly, in my opinion, as far as really getting involved with startups in this ecosystem that are going to be building the next wave of finance at, kind of a time when the mainstream doesn't realize what's happening here. And so I think from a returns perspective, you have kind of an opportunity to really get in kind of on the ground floor, maybe akin to, somebody buying Bitcoin in 2011 or 2012 in that time frame. That's kind of how I view where we are in terms of the venture capital part of this ecosystem. And so I think not only are you doing good by supporting the companies and the infrastructure providers in the space, but I think from a purely returns point of view, I think there's certainly a high chance of outsized returns by supporting this ecosystem early on. And then I would also say that I think a lot of it too just goes back to kind of like that shared vision and shared mission of just wanting to see Bitcoin bring about change in the world. Kind of as silly as that sounds to outsiders, I think, as we all know, once you start going down the rabbit hole, you can kind of see, quote unquote, the things that Bitcoin fixes. And I think just supporting that mission is, also something that a lot of people find attractive.
Great answer, man. Thank you so much. I think I thought about it in similar ways where first and foremost, it's like you said, almost a sense of responsibility, right? For those of us that have we're on the ground floor, on the front lines, just orange pilling people, building the infrastructure. But then I liked what you said about that closing window of opportunity where you could potentially outpace Bitcoin in yep. terms of ROI because of the arbitrage opportunity. So I like that.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, and just kind of, looking back on some of the success that early capital allocators have had in the ecosystem, I think it's fair to say that, probably not since 2011 or 2012, you were probably better off just buying spot Bitcoin then. But, certainly in the last 5 or 6 years, a lot of Bitcoin startups have outpaced the the growth of Bitcoin, the asset itself. And, you know, I think that will continue to occur just because there's going to be so many new users coming into the Bitcoin ecosystem in the next 5, 10, you know, 15 years. Obviously, I still believe Bitcoin, the asset, has a ton of growth ahead of it, but I think some of the infrastructure providers and the companies building, you know, the future financial applications that will support, you know, hundreds of millions of Bitcoiners, I think there's a ton of great potential for massive venture style returns in our ecosystem as well.
Yeah, definitely. And that one thing that you said, you were talking about, like, you know, people just wanting to support the ecosystem. And I really noticed that not directly regarding supporting like Bitcoin only companies or like Bitcoin finance companies. But one thing that we've noticed, at least we have an ambassador program with Coinbits. And some of our ambassadors are like own businesses, like Ben Justman, for example, owns a winery. But a lot of his business comes from Bitcoiners who see him as a Bitcoiner, and then they want to buy his wine because he's a Bitcoiner. And he also makes great wine as well, right? But like that's another interesting like dynamic that we've picked up around the social layer of Bitcoin, that like people want to do business with Bitcoiners. And I mean, a lot of them do want to like do it in Bitcoin, but I think to some extent, it's like, it's almost that they just want to like, you know, lift each other up. So it's been a really positive thing to see.
Yeah, for sure. I think kind of going back to the Bitcoin meetups topic and, you know, just socialization of Bitcoiners in general, I think that's certainly true. I mean, you see the rise of things like the Beef Initiative, which is pretty closely tied to Bitcoiners, all the way to, you know, people making honey for Bitcoin or, you know, any kind of product. And I think Bitcoiners are just apt to go out of their way a lot of the times to support fellow Bitcoiners. And I know, you know, here in Kansas City, when we're hosting the meetup, we certainly go out of our way to patronize bars and restaurants that accept Bitcoin. And, you know, while that's not always like the easiest thing to get up and running, we found that once we get over, you know, whatever technical hurdles there might be to get the establishment up and running on Bitcoin, I think they pretty quickly, you know, realize that there's a group of loyal customers that are willing to go out of their way, maybe, you know, drive farther than they normally would to come visit their establishment just because they want to pay in Bitcoin. They want to talk to other people, you know, about Bitcoin. And I think obviously we'll continue to see kind of that that spread across the country as Bitcoin adoption continues to gain steam.
Yeah, absolutely. And going to meetups is just such a good thing to do. It's really like I feel like refreshed whenever I go. Another question for you, not to be like a downer, right? But what do you think are like the greatest, you know, hurdles that like entrepreneurs or Bitcoiners or like the ecosystem faces over the next few years?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's definitely a lot. So, I mean, I still think we have probably some regulatory headwinds coming. While, you know, I feel much better being in Bitcoin than I would be feeling if I was a crypto investor right now, I still do think it's not going to be easy sailing as far as the regulatory front goes. And so I think, you know, companies, and we're seeing that a bit with the choke point 2.0 stuff going on, where even innocent bystanders that aren't doing anything with crypto or tokens or anything are still being kind of, you know, debanked. And even if they're not being maybe formally kicked out from their bank, they're having a lot of additional scrutiny and questions asked that they weren't, you know, 3 to 6 months ago. So I think that type of thing will continue. I expect at some point to be a little bit of a crackdown on things like, you know, self-sovereign Bitcoin tools and Bitcoin usage. I do think you know, companies that provide those types of services will ultimately survive and thrive. But I am slightly worried that some of those, some of that innovation might be pushed outside of the U.S. Just because I think, you know, a lot of the rhetoric that we hear from the Elizabeth Warrens of the world, you know, obviously they don't want Bitcoin to be easily used in a privacy preserving way, in a self-sovereign way. They can't stop it, but, you know, they can make it more difficult. So I think that's one thing that we'll probably encounter here in the next few years. I do think there's still a bit of a misunderstanding between, well, a big misunderstanding between Bitcoin and crypto. It's getting better than it was, as we kind of talked about a little while ago, but there's still certainly some misunderstandings there that we're going to need to work through. And then, yeah, like specifically to the venture side of the industry, I do think that, as we've talked a little bit about, like people need to be patient as far as returns go when they're investing in Bitcoin only venture. I think that's getting better as well, as people realize that, you know, the promises of the crypto ecosystem were mostly lies and unsustainable tokenomics models. I think that that will continue to get better as well. But I don't expect, you know, easy sailing and everybody making like 100x on their money. So we certainly still have some education and some hurdles to work through for sure.
Yeah, definitely. On the hardware front, that's, I definitely, I'm with you, because, you know, you see that those, like, at least in Europe, I think that they were trying to like regulate your ability to take self-custody. But then also at the same time, like, Jack Dorsey's company releasing that hardware wallet, like I think that's big, because that's like the biggest, you know, kind of mainstream company that's released that. So
totally,
yeah, definitely, yeah,
it's a good sign. Yeah, I do kind of worry a little bit that you know, maybe if not explicitly requiring KYC, there might be some kind of like implicit, you know, way to track folks that are. Obviously, if Coinbase is on the other side of the trade, then they're going to have, you know, probably a lot more information than we would like. Now we can have a whole conversation on whether, you know, the trade-offs are worth it to onboard, you know, the masses to Bitcoin who might not otherwise, you know, become even aware of the ecosystem, that probably will at least have some familiarity with it, you know, after things like BitKey are introduced. But yeah, I mean, I still do think there's like some concerns there as well.
Yeah, definitely. So one kind of final question before we wrap up here, and just this conversation has been great, so I really appreciate your taking the time. Thoughts on Bitcoin globally? Do you only do domestic investment? Like, what are the differences that you see in terms of like Bitcoin outside the US versus inside the US, and any thoughts on El Salvador?
Yeah, no, good question. I'm glad you asked. I think, I invest in Bitcoin companies all over the world. So I'm not specifically domiciled here in the US as far as my investing goes. I think some of the starkest differences we're seeing, here recently are, you know, unfortunately, a lot of companies that probably would have been started in the U.S. maybe a year or two ago, those founders are now leaving the country and going to start those companies in friendlier jurisdictions. So I think that trend will probably continue. As kind of, you know, as sad as that makes me to say, I do think that's probably on a bit of a path that's not going to change anytime real soon. So that's one note there that I've seen over the last 6 to 12 months becoming more prevalent. And then kind of some of the other differences I would say are just in terms of like company valuations. Typically outside of the US, at least historically, valuations are lower. So for people like me that are, you know, super interested in finding what I view as valuable opportunities that might be, you know, a little bit discounted to market, a lot of those tend to be in startups outside of the US. I'm not so sure if that will continue or not. Maybe that's just a function of kind of, you know, where Bitcoin is most mainstream. You know, a lot of folks outside of the US may not be as familiar with Bitcoin as they are here in the US. Obviously, that varies a lot depending on which country you're talking about. But I do think we'll see more startups outside of the US kind of moving forward. In terms of El Salvador, super bullish on El Salvador. I think a lot of the things they've been doing over the last year, specifically in terms of getting ready for Bitcoin denominated bonds, are super exciting. I think the path to dual citizenship in El Salvador is probably something that's going to be a hot topic in the next bull market for a lot of Bitcoiners. You know, I think the first thing a lot of Bitcoiners are going to do when they start feeling like they have some wealth again is probably explore dual citizenship or maybe a property or something like that in El Salvador. So pretty exciting. A lot of new startups are also being formed in El Salvador, which is cool to see. You know, you have Max and Stacey Herbert down there kind of taking the lead on bringing awareness to the El Salvador mission. And you have companies, you know, like Tether supporting and bringing funding into the district, as well as like the Swans and the Strikes of the world, who are setting up offices in El Salvador and hiring local El Salvadorans and really just providing education and funding to that region. So yeah, super excited about the next couple of years for El Salvador specifically as well.
Thank you. That was awesome. We agree too. We've just been writing a little bit about how jurisdictions are emerging across the world that are more friendly to innovation. In particular, there's the MiCA, MICA mm-hmm. regulation in Europe, which is driving talent out of Europe, unfortunately. And back when we wrote it, I think it was before some of these enforcement actions, and I was thinking it was like Hong Kong, El Salvador, and the U.S. I think the U.S. still probably does have viability midterm, but I think there's like this freezing effect or this chilling effect, rather, of the uncertainty going on right now and all the FUD. But it'll work through. I actually think the U.S. is – I'm pretty bullish on the U.S. for Bitcoin, honestly, because we do have this tradition of – culturally, of being interested in sovereignty and interested in freedom and technologies that enable freedom. And so I think as the information breaks through the FUD here, I'm hopeful that this is still going to be a center of Bitcoin innovation.
Yep, I agree with you for sure. I think what's cool too is this is kind of like, if you guys have read the Sovereign Individual or familiar with the thesis, I mean, this is kind of playing out real time, which is pretty cool to watch. You know, obviously, obviously Bitcoin is global, and Bitcoiners too are becoming more self-sovereign individuals and able to, you know, spend their time and capital in friendly jurisdictions. And I think we'll continue to see more of that as kind of this whole thing continues to play out. But I agree with you. I think, you know, long-term, I think the U.S. will come around to their senses and support Bitcoin innovation. And really, you know, they've been very supportive to Bitcoin throughout its life so far. It's just more of the saber rattling that sometimes, you know, scares off potential entrepreneurs. And it's cyclical. You know, I think right now we're just in the part of the cycle where that rhetoric, like you said, is heating up a bit. But yeah, I do expect it to come back the other way as well.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm glad to hear that. I'm hopeful too. Well, this is, you know, we've been going about an hour and 10 minutes here. If anybody has questions or thoughts that they want to share, feel free to raise your hand and I'll extend speaking rights to you, and you can take the stage and speak for a little bit. And in the meantime, I'm going to start wrapping up the session here. So I'll be watching the screen, and if anybody raises their hand, I'll stop what I'm doing. We've been listening to Sats Standard Capital, Don from Sats Standard Capital, and Casey Hoddle, who runs the Kansas City Bitcoin Meetup, about Bitcoin VC, BlackRock, and trends in the Bitcoin industry. And just real quick, so you guys know who we are, if you're not familiar, we're Coinbits. We have been around since
2017 helping you get Bitcoin, back when it was a lot harder to get Bitcoin from a Bitcoin-only company, and it wasn't clear like what was the safe option. Coinbits was there innovating and bringing Bitcoin to people who really were really a little bit less information, technologically adept. Maybe they thought that Bitcoin was only for, you know, computer nerds and technical people, and Coinbits was there building a community. So we've been in this game of building on Bitcoin and building that social layer for several years now. And we're family run, and we are totally committed to Bitcoin values. So you're never going to hear about Coinbits taking VC money to start listing other tokens. Believe me, we've been asked, and we turn them down because we're in it for the long term, and we don't want to sacrifice our volumes for short-term gain, like many of you wouldn't. Check out coinbits.app. Today we have really strong DCA features where you can set up a savings habit, and you can save in Bitcoin on a schedule, weekly, bi-weekly, monthly. We also have a daily DCA, so you're able to benefit from like the more rapid DCA schedule of daily. We also have roundups. That's our core feature where you can link your credit card or your bank account, round up your spare change, and save in Bitcoin really slowly and steadily over time. It's a great way to orange pill people who are a little bit less committed to Bitcoin but curious. Tell them about Coinbits. Tell them to round up with Coinbits. Don't worry about how much to buy or when to buy, and it just happens automatically. We are rolling out some really interesting new features in the coming weeks, though. So one of them is the Bitcoin IRA. We talked to people about how, you know, IRA, retirement accounts, 401ks, IRAs, you know, they might be scattered around. Most of them are in the stock market, and there's various levels of comfort with that. And a lot of these members that we talk to, they have these retirement accounts, and they'd rather have that in Bitcoin, but they don't want to take the tax hit of pulling the money out. So we created the Bitcoin IRA. So this is going to let you roll those over. So you can make your annual contributions as usual, but you can also roll over existing accounts. So it's kind of like suddenly having a giant pile of Bitcoin that, you know, you didn't have before. And it's really exciting. We're really excited to bring that to people in the coming weeks. We're putting the finishing touches on it now, so it won't be long now. We are running it as a pilot at first, and so there's going to be a waiting list that we go down. So the first people on the waiting list are going to get to open their IRAs first. So if this is something that interests you, I would really suggest that you get on the waiting list. We have a long one at this point. But the nice thing is, even if you join it now, if you go and share your link, then you're able to move up in line automatically. So go join the wait list, go to coinbits.app and find the IRA button and go there and join the wait list. And then it's going to give you a link. And if you share that link and people join, then you can move up in line. And I actually saw somebody move from, like, I don't know, 50 something into the top dozen. So it can work really, really well. The other thing we're releasing is something called Coinbits Cash. And what this is a cash advance product that lets you achieve fiat liquidity without selling your Bitcoin. So if you need a float till your next payday, or you have some short-term expenses that you just need to take care of quickly, you can use Coinbits Cash. Some of your Bitcoin will be locked up in a vault, and we are able to send you a cash advance. You get the fiat within a couple of days, pay your bills, and then if you pay it back within 30 days, you're able to prevent the Bitcoin from being sold. If you do nothing, no worries. We'll just automatically sell the Bitcoin for you to cover. So it's just a nice option for people who they need the money now. They'd rather not sell their Bitcoin. And there's no debt, there's no risk. It's really straightforward. So that's called Coinbits Cash, and we're going to be releasing that this summer. So, all of this and more is available, guys. Also US dollar accounts. There's so much coming down the pike. So sign up to coinbits.app. We are the best option for Bitcoin DCA and managing your Bitcoin. We have the best UX in the industry. We keep hearing that from people, and it's incredibly flattering and humbling. But as long as we keep hearing it, we'll keep repeating it. So join coinbits.app. And thank you all for being here. We do this every single week. We find an interesting Bitcoiner, influencer, thought leader to come on the show and have a conversation. We really appreciate Don's time today. Thank you, Don, again. And this has been recorded. It's going to be put out on a podcast. You can subscribe to that if you'd like to re-listen later. So thanks, everyone. Have a wonderful weekend, a wonderful Father's Day to the fathers out there and their families. And have a great rest of your day. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Bitcoin Roundup podcast presented by Coinbits. So what do you think of the conversation? Share your thoughts with us on Twitter at Coinbits app, and be sure to subscribe to be notified of our next episode release. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the Bitcoin Roundup podcast.